A community that knows itself takes care of itself. The stories of those who live in the Matsu Borough are as varied as the people themselves. Some you have heard. Some, perhaps, you have not. This is Voices of the Matsu, bringing our stories to life.
I'm Emily Forstner, your host today with Voices of the Matsu. Throughout this program, we talk a lot about community, the what's and where's and who's and why's of those smaller groups of our world. Today's story is important to share, but we do acknowledge it has sensitive content for some. Please listen with care, because today we connect not with a community, but with a threat to our community. A threat that never asks for whom the bell tolls, for this bell doesn't care. It tolls for someone in the United States every 5 minutes. Someone's loved one, a sibling, a friend, someone's child.
911 with your emergency, please.
We call this episode Tag Lee, Forever 21 and Never Forgotten. It's the story of a silent and serial killer in the Matsu, fentanyl. A story shared by Julie Bouchard, a mother who never forgets the son lost to an overdose.
My name is Julie Bouchard. I wanted to introduce you to my amazing son, Tag David Lee. I'm telling you about him with a broken heart, an utterly devastated soul, a story no mother should ever have to tell. You see, I lost my son, Tag, to fentanyl poisoning. In other words, he was murdered.
And shared by Dr. Ann Zink.
I am Dr. Ann Zink. I'm the chief medical officer for the state of Alaska, and I'm also a practicing emergency medicine physician out here in the Matsu Valley.
A doctor who, at the end of the stethoscope, is a witness to the fentanyl crisis every day.
Fentanyl is one of a series of different opioids. So it is a synthetically derived chemical, very similar to opium, heroin, other opioids. Percocet, Vicodin have that, plus Tylenol. The difference with fentanyl is it's highly concentrated, and so just a little tiny, tiny bit can both provide tremendous pain relief, but also can cause really negative side effects, including people's gut can slow down, people's breathing can slow down, and so even a very small amount, like the amount on the tip of a pencil, is enough to kill you.
Tag Lee was 21 years old when
he went to bed and never woke up. We never got to say goodbye, never got a last hug, or to tell him just how much we love him and how proud we were of him. He had almost 4 times the lethal amount in his system. Losing a child to fentanyl is the hardest thing I've ever done and had to go through. And I've made it my mission in life to try to prevent that from happening to another family.
I think what's so challenging about fentanyl is because such a small dose can kill someone, really one pill can kill, we're seeing people who are dying of fentanyl overdoses who've both been struggling with a previous addiction. So they may be struggling with a heroin addiction, but now fentanyl's mixed in, because it's cheaper and it's easier, and one little bit is enough to kill them.
Kids like Tag.
He was born in November, cold, snowy day. We had to travel from Talkeetna down to the hospital. And I had quite a difficult pregnancy with him, unlike my two older daughters. A lot of sickness and some complications, and I look back on that now and just kind of wonder if those complications and the difficulty I had was maybe a precursor to what might happen later down the road. He definitely was all boy.
We see the highest rates of overdoses are particularly in men in their 20s and 30s. And so like in the seafood processing industry, slope work, construction work, we see really high rates.
He was always into things. He loved his little superhero, little action figures. Every time we went to the store, he'd want to buy another Spider-Man or Batman or Superman.
We also, unfortunately, particularly in some of our small rural communities, a bad batch of fentanyl will get in, and suddenly we'll see like 4 deaths in a really small community. We see that also out here in the Valley. Like, there will be nights I'll be working a shift, and clearly a bad batch got in, and we'll see 4 or 5 overdoses on a shift. And so again, there's no safety control on illicit pills. There's no safety control on heroin.
They always said he was a joy to have in class, that he liked to be funny.
We see a lot of fentanyl, so about 70% of our deaths have fentanyl in them, that are associated with them. But I would say the vast majority of fentanyl overdoses also have other medication with them. So it's heroin and fentanyl. It's methamphetamine and fentanyl. So it's very rarely actually fentanyl alone.
The one picture I'm thinking about right now was a 4th of July parade where he was sitting on the side of the road, just up on the curb, watching all the fire trucks and the parade floats go by, and he had the biggest smile on his face and his little action figures in his hand, and he just was so happy.
So in 2022, we saw 151 confirmed fentanyl-related overdoses statewide, which made up about 60% of the overdoses. In 2023, that really went up, and we look like we're looking at least 300 or so overdoses statewide, and about 70% of them look to be fentanyl.
Imagine this, a 747 full of passengers crashes and everybody on board dies every single day in America. Do you know what a headline that would be?
And I just talked about 300 overdoses. That's 300 children. That's 300 brothers, 300 sisters, 300 parents. Like, those people are all connected to a much broader scope of people. And that death doesn't really just happen to them. That death happens to everyone around them. And the ripples of devastation that happen after an overdose are absolutely devastating.
He did get into some trouble in junior high. Him and some friends frequently liked to skip school. His dad and I decided that since he didn't want to stay in high school and wanted to be out and about with his buddies, that maybe the youth military academy would talk some sense into him and show him that school is important and he needed to start focusing on his future and what life was going to be like as a young man. It was great. Tag was able to get his GED. He was able to be involved in several community service outreaches. He starts to think outside the box and think about what he wanted to do with his life. And travel and art was high on the list. And so he decided that he was going to take a trip by himself. He went to Indonesia and Bali backpacking. That was a pretty brave decision of him. I was pretty proud of him for that. I had asked him if he wanted his mom to go with him, and he just laughed at me. This was right before COVID hit real hard, and he was going to stay 3 months over there, but then they started shutting countries down, and I told him he needed to come home, that I didn't want him stuck in some other country without a job, without any money, without a way home. So he came home after just a little over a month. He thought he wanted to be involved in art and music, but he was a little bit apprehensive or shy, I guess I could say, about getting in there, like pushing his way into the art or music scene. And so he decided he would go work for his dad in Talkeetna. I was feeling like maybe he was starting to grow up and realized that he needed to work and he needed to find a path to and a goal to work towards. I felt like he was starting to feel that. He was starting to feel the push to make something of himself. So he was able to rent a little cabin from his cousin, and he started working up there for the summer.
So if someone, say, is chronically taking opioids and then suddenly gets a urinary tract infection, then it can be very slow. Someone who takes a pill that's highly concentrated in fentanyl, it may take 10, 15 minutes before that medication would be enough to kick in and someone could stop breathing.
It was July 15th, 2021, and approximately 10:30 a.m. I was at my house in Palmer, and I had just gotten a new gas stove delivered. So I was on the floor behind the stove, hooking up the gas line and getting the stove put together when my daughter called. And I answered, and she didn't say hello or anything. She just screamed out, "Mom, Tag's dead."
Usually what starts to happen is people become more somnolent, more sleepy, not as responsive. They may just look like they're kind of sleeping. Then they'll start to have slower breaths. They're breathing very slowly. And then they'll get what's called agonal respirations, where it almost looks like they're kind of gasping for air. And then they just stop breathing. And then they can turn blue and become unresponsive.
And I was like, what? I was in complete shock. Like, how did this happen? What happened? And she told me that he didn't show up for work. And so his dad drove to his cabin to see where he was, figuring that he'd just slept in too late or decided not to come. And the door was locked, and his dad had to go through a window. And he found him passed in his bed. I didn't know what to do. I was alone and in shock. I walked outside onto my deck and I just collapsed. And I just started crying.
And the most common thing that I have seen in the emergency department is someone has overdosed. A friend of theirs has naloxone. They reverse it.
Naloxone. You may recognize it as the brand name Narcan. This drug, in simple terms, reverses the opioid overdose by blocking receptors in the brain. It's administered simply through the nose. In the sad world of overdose, this drug is a miracle.
The patient's brought in, and by the time they come to see us, they're alert, they're awake, and they are shocked that this happened. They said, "I never meant to hurt myself. I never meant for this to happen. There's no way that this could have happened. I've used these pain pills before. I always used this amount and was always safe before. I don't know what happened. There's no way I could have overdosed."
He decided to take something that he shouldn't. I know he didn't know what he was taking, nor would he have wanted to take it if he knew what it was. And it ended up being 100% pure fentanyl. It was four times the lethal amount that they found in his system. Tag was murdered. Someone murdered him with pure fentanyl. We currently do have a police investigation open to try to find out where he got the fentanyl and maybe who's responsible, but I can't give too many details about that.
The main ways that we work with law enforcement as a medical community is as they're analyzing substances that have been confiscated, they're helping to share that to the public health team. And the public health team is sharing, for example, not individuals, but trends that we're seeing, for example, with the medical examiner's toxicology screening. So we work with law enforcement for situational awareness on understanding of what's coming in, what's going out, what trends are we seeing. But not on the individual level. We want to make sure that anyone who is struggling with addiction has the opportunity to be well, and there are real federal restrictions on the information we share. There's no safety control on heroin and fentanyl. You know, a description was once shared, and I like it. It's, you know, like, think about making chocolate chip cookies. And if you stir it up really well, you know, the chocolate is evenly dispersed. But if you just throw it all together, you might have some that have a lot of chocolate chips and some with very few. And the same is true with fentanyl, fentanyl production, and illicit pills. There's no quality control. And so one pill might not have anything in it, and one pill might have a whole lot.
Tag was not a junkie. He was a productive member of society. He was not a thief. He was not lazy. He simply was battling depression. I actually knew he was doing drugs about 2 weeks before he died. He had called me and said, "Mom, I need to talk to you about something." And I thought he was going to tell me about a new job idea or his latest travel plans, like what country he was going to go visit next or where he was going. But he ended up spilling it on the phone, even though he wanted to meet in person, that he had been experimenting with heroin. And my mommy heart just sank, because I know nothing good can come from heroin. And he assured me, no, he didn't need help, that he was in control, that he wasn't just a stupid junkie. He said, "Mom, I've got this." And I knew better. Down in my heart, I knew better that you cannot control heroin. Heroin will control you. And you may think that you're strong enough, but you're not. And Tag was not either.
There's a quote from John Hyatt that I love that says, "The opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection." And what ways we can build connection as a community together to make sure that people are aware of these medication, they don't take these medication, they have the ability to reverse an overdose if they see it, but more importantly, people feel like they belong and they feel like they don't need to take any. And that's not to say that every overdose is because of mental health or because someone doesn't feel like they belong, but we know that when we build connection for our youth, for our community, that we see overdose rates decrease. So that we have to approach it from numerous angles.
Yeah, the guilt is terrible, because you just go over and over in your mind the what-if, the would've, should've, could've's. I should've went up and got him and brought him home. Or I should've made him go to treatment. Or if only I would've loved him a little more. I have a couple of online groups that I am members of, like on Facebook, of Mothers Against Fentanyl and a couple other ones. There's nobody within that group that's not a grieving parent that can help us and show us how to live without our child, or how to process the guilt or the shame or the stigma that's related to our children who do drugs. The guilt is real, and it never stops. We used to talk about the at-risk youth in our community, but today, all young people are at risk. You can't trust anybody. You can't trust anything. 7 out of 10 counterfeit pills contain a lethal amount of fentanyl. The amount of fentanyl that it takes to kill a person of average size is about the size of Abraham Lincoln's nose on a penny. There's no experimenting today.
What's hard with fentanyl right now is we really, with that working together, we saw opioids really decrease and opioid deaths really decrease in like 2018. And we were really starting to see some progress. And then fentanyl came in. And once fentanyl came in, it just came in with a vengeance. We're just seeing this massive surge again, despite all of this really important work to help to treating opioid and opioid addiction, and why it's so much more important now than ever before for everyone to carry naloxone or Narcan, and no one to use something that they don't know specifically where it came from.
but nothing told me that he was doing heroin. I had this false idea of what a heroin addict looked like. He wasn't homeless. He was neat in appearance. In fact, he took pride in his clothing and his cleanliness. He had a button-up brown sweater that the family dubbed his Mr. Rogers sweater because he loved to wear funky things.
With the great threat of fentanyl, we're going to have to pivot. We're going to have to change our tactics. What was working is not working anymore in the same way. I also encourage my children to carry naloxone because I think they see it around them. They hear the friends and they feel in some ways powerless and hopeless in their ability to respond. Even if they're not using, they don't want to lose their friend. They don't want to lose their friend's big brother, but they see it and they feel it. And so by giving them a tool to potentially save a life, it is one small step in empowering them to have agency and change if they come across it.
Fentanyl and other drugs have zero discrimination criteria.
I mean, my sister died 18 years ago now from a suicide, and there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her. And so I think about that just incredibly long-term ripple that happens to a family, to a community, when they lose someone at a young age, particularly when it's sudden like this, when it's, a sudden death. No one's prepared for it.
Like, I wake up every morning and the first thought is, tag's gone. So while everybody else that attended the memorial service and everything gave their condolences and went back to their life, I relive it every single day. And I keep waiting to see him walk back through the door.
If you look at the reasons that the U.S. life expectancy is decreasing, it's because of what we call deaths of despair. It's overdoses, it's suicides, it's alcohol-related deaths. So the United States as a whole had decreasing life expectancy even prior to the pandemic, and that has only gotten much worse. And when we've done a deep dive into why that is, it's really these deaths of despair. And why it's important to have conversations like this, and why we need to think about addressing this as a community.
I am forever changed in some of the ways I look at people differently. I look at people that are struggling differently. I've become more passionate, more compassionate towards people. If I see a homeless person, my heart just drops, and I automatically think about the mom of that person, not knowing where their child is, if their child's warm or hungry, and it just breaks my heart. I've also become more protective of my other children. I still have a 12-year-old son at home. I think I treat him like he's younger, and I think I drive him nuts.
We've distributed in last year, in 2023, over 46,000 kits of naloxone. A few years ago, we distributed like 10,000 kits, so a huge increase in the number of kits we're distributing. The other thing that we are distributing is both fentanyl as well as xylazine test strips. They're in the naloxone kits that the state distributes. And so we distributed almost 90,000 fentanyl test strips last year and about 6,000 xylazine test strips.
Naloxone is available through a prescription, or better yet, free, through Project Hope resources. They can be found at several sites throughout the MATSU. The complete list is found on the opioid dashboard found at opioid.alaska.gov.
So in general, it's good practice to wear gloves when you're touching someone you don't know for all sorts of infectious disease reasons, but don't have a fear of being accidentally poisoned by fentanyl if you touch someone who has overdosed. Just give them naloxone and save their life with or without gloves.
It's said that we suffer three deaths: The first death is the last breath taken. The second, at burial. And the third death, when your name is no longer spoken. For Julie and the thousands of others who have lost ones to fentanyl, that final goodbye is simply not an option. Forever 21, never forgotten.
Every August is empty chair month. It's when families that are across the United States that have lost a loved one from fentanyl, we put out an empty chair out in our yard. People decorate it and put pictures or flowers or whatever their loved one was into out with a little sign that just to remember them that we do have an empty chair this year. Our family's grieving over an empty chair.
You have one in your yard?
I do. I live in downtown Palmer, and yes, I have a purple chair right out where everybody can see it.
Tag would be very proud of you.
Thank you. I'm pretty proud of the young man he was.
I ask Julie and Dr. Zink one word. Just one word.
I mean, devastating is the first word that comes to mind. Crushing is like the second word that comes to mind. It just feels like there's this wave of illicit fentanyl entering everything. And it feels hard to predict who's going to be exposed and when.
Talk. Talk to your kids. Know what they're doing. Love on them. Be there for them. Accept them and whatever their struggles are. I have a photo of him when he was in Indonesia, and he was standing by a waterfall, and he just looked so happy. He had this big grin on his face, and it just said to me, look, Mom, I did it. I went all the way across the world by myself.
Look, Mom, no hands.
Yep.
We all have a part in this story that it is not inevitable that we're just going to have more and more fentanyl overdoses, that this is a story that we all choose to write, and I want to write a story of resilience and a story of health and wellness, but that's going to take all of us.
In the time that you've been listening, 5 people in the United States have died of a fentanyl-related overdose.
One of the last things that my son Tag said to me was, Mom, I love the rain. I love everything about it, the smell and the cold and the dark. So sure enough, it was clear, blue, beautiful August day, not a cloud in the sky. But my eulogy at his memorial service was about rain and how my son taught me to dance in the rain. And you know what? All of a sudden, it started pouring rain. So I leave you with this, that I believe my son was saying to me and everyone else that's listening, don't ever stop dancing in the rain.
For those wanting to know more about the fentanyl crisis or how they can help, contact the MATSU Opioid Task Force or True North Recovery, or the State Department of Health at opioid.alaska.gov. And that'll be a wrap for today's episode of Voices of the MATSU. If you have a story or know of someone who does, contact us at voices@bigcabbageradio.org. Until next time, it's been nice getting to know each other a little bit more. Thanks for listening. Stay good out there, MATSU.
This was Voices of the MATSU, sharing stories told by those who live in the MATSU borough. To revisit this and past stories, go to bigcabbageradio.org. This project is funded by a grant from the MATSU Health Foundation and is produced by Emily Forstner for Big Cabbage Radio. The views expressed in Voices of the MATSU do not represent the views of Big Cabbage Radio or the MATSU Health Foundation. Comments or questions about this show may be sent to voices@bigcabbageradio.org. matsu.org.